this is Jason Horsley with part two of my conversation with the Greek for the Limitless, the podcast between.
It makes me feel like I'm waking up my brain. But the hardest time of dawn is in the evening when I feel like all the world.
I mean, is that a good thing though? I mean, this is...
Yes.
Back to this point I keep trying to reiterate, but I'm not sure if you're hearing it, but the like you were saying that in order to define things and get to grips with concepts, that's necessary to actually embody them. And my experience is the reverse, is that the definitions and the concepts have actually come between myself and an embodiment and
that's
a relationship
fine.
With my embodiment. With my body and my reality, and I would say that goes 1,000 times more for the gods. Like, they don't want to interact with me, a bit presumptuous to say what they want, but anyway, through a filter of my ideas about what they are. And so I don't see how you can represent the gods through language without...
That's fine.
Missing so much out that you're inevitably going to be misrepresenting them, and I think that you know that. That's my sense, is that you're actually kind of consciously misrepresenting truth, knowing that you can't avoid doing that, so trying to do it consciously. That's my impression.
Well, what you're discussing is the stuff that romanticism and art and human culture is based on. That's not what I'm going after. What I'm going after is, are we looking at what's been memorialized about the gods? And when we do look at it, we'll see that it is extreme. It is very detailed in many cases, mm-hmm. even though the narrative is void of many of the things that we consider to be important. Mm-hmm. You know, you won't find airplanes, rockets, and iPhones in there. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is that there is no examination of what has been written in the past or memorialized about them, mm. as if everyone has recreated this environment that they're living in, like everything sprang into existence 100 years ago.
Mm. Right.
No one is going back and examining. They're just trusting what is being said about the biblical text, about the Mahabharata, about the Prakrit and Sanskrit.
Yeah, so...
There's no accurate evaluation of it. There's no accurate evaluation of science. All of the scientists in the 19th century called magnetics the dielectric field.
Mm.
Wow! But, if you start teaching that to young people who have a scientific mind, they're going to make progress in magnetics that you would know, I mean, you wouldn't know what to do. It would push society 500 years into the future in less than a decade.
Mm. So, but it seems you don't really want people to think about this stuff because you jump... horses so rapidly, you know, even in a single sentence, that it's impossible to really keep up with all the correlations between what you're describing.
That's
you know,
fine.
Much less
you're
unpack
it.
One particular one. Yeah, right. But so, oh shit. See, now I lost.
Yes, let's go back to the gods. Representing the gods, there is no representation of what's been memorialized about them at all. Sorry to
right,
say that.
There's no representation of what's been memorialized in
about
the culture.
The gods.
In the culture.
Yes, because the culture...
But you're doing that. I mean, you're aspiring
well,
to do
I?
That. Well,
am
you're,
I doing
you,
it?
Apparently, because you're saying this is what's going on with the gods, you know, in their lateral sphere and all the rest of it, and
yeah,
this is referring to scripture. But you don't actually
scripture.
Cite the scripture. Like for
why
me,
should I?
For me, it would be much more helpful if you were to say, "This is what I know about the gods, and this is why, and this is the passage in the scripture that I have extrapolated this from."
Oh, but it doesn't work that way because it's an entire picture. Just like, for
okay.
example, it's a jigsaw puzzle.
I understand.
You have...
Yeah, yeah, various passages. But at least give us something substantial to
okay,
work with.
Okay, I understand. I understand that I have done that in the past, but not as much maybe recently. Let me give you an example. For example, this is called the Christian era, and it's been dubbed so by atheist historians, so you can't say that it's a religious term strictly.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Christian era, the past 2,000 years. Whenever you run into these critters, that species, let's say, they start doing what I call the McDonald's commercial, 2 all beef patty, special sauce, semi-semi bun on a sesame, well, you know what I'm talking about? Blah, 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 like some kind of jingle.
Yeah.
They start saying, well, Matthew, Mark, blah, 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 24:15, verse 19:17, follow and say, so you got to do, you're a sinner.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
Whoa, I didn't get any of that. You know what? As soon as I hear that, I am so turned off, and I don't mean in a sexual sense, but yeah, that too. If that would just be dead to me, you know. Death to me, cognitively.
Okay, but that's again, that's pretty low bar, and it's the other end of the.
It's all low, but it's all low bar. I was
Well,
recently in an interview and someone says low-hanging fruit. I said, no, there is no low-hanging fruit. It's all fallen to the ground and rotten at this point. Here's an example of looking at, and I say so many things, it doesn't matter if you're looking at what's been memorialized in the past about any subject, because most people say, oh, that's old. They were primitive. See, we're much smarter now.
Yeah,
we're
yeah.
modern.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, I know, but I mean, we share that dissatisfaction, frustration, and even contempt for our society. So why address that? You know, if we're already on the same page
well,
about
the
that.
Mindset is very different. I dare anyone to go look at an eighth grade final exam from 1890s. A college professor can't get maybe 2 or 3 out of the 50 questions. I dare anyone to go look back. There are pretty good archives and read the newspaper from 150 years ago. Look at the level of communication that's being illustrated.
Okay, but that's gone. I mean, it's past, right? This is
yes.
This is where we are now. This is the reality
yes.
of it.
Yes, but it's the same thing. Look, you were saying earlier, the ancestral. It's a continuation of the ancestral.
Yeah.
Right.
So you're addressing the ancestors as well.
No, not really. That leaves a bad taste in my mouth because there's something called ancestral worship, and they're dead and they're done and they're irrelevant at this point. What's relative is how much of it that you're holding on. There's something about, you know, they can't handle meat. They can only handle milk. That means like they're still on the mother's teat. You know, in other words, what they're speaking and spouting is what their parents told them.
Mm.
You see, versus. Right, they're not, yeah. Okay, so looking back is very important, not because of the way, the style, and even the quality, but also the quantity that you can bring forward. Because when something is irrelevant or wrong, how much of the quantity do you have that is relative or right? Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If you ordered a truck full of beans and they brought you a truck full of strawberries, it's still a truck full, but how many beans do you have? Zero. That's not what you need.
So
to get the profit.
Zoom out, getting to the root, like addressing the root of the delusion.
It's a delusion, but it's also put on by the gods. Because have you heard of the Tower of Babel? You know, they were doing something,
yeah,
and they were confused, and their languages changed. What, they couldn't do hand language and sign language to communicate? We do it here all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they couldn't develop a method of universal translation, although it put the project back a week, a month, or a year, and then resume it. Why not?
Well, they did, I guess.
No, they didn't, because it didn't. It confused their ability to rationalize why they were doing what they were doing.
Yeah, but we're still building a Tower of Babel, is what I mean.
No, we're not. It wasn't even really called the Tower of Babel. It was a tower in Babel. It's just like there is no burning bush. You know, if you read the text, there was an angel that had fire. Yeah, and he stood behind a bush, didn't burn the bush. No, it was not even a symbol.
Okay.
Never happened.
No, the Babel. Yeah. But the Tower of Babel is symbolic language, I mean.
Yes, symbolic language. But then again, when you say apocalypse, just means to reveal. When they say Armageddon, that just means Har Megiddo, the mountain of Megiddo. When you say the word nice, that means foolish, stupid, senseless, the way it's being used. In some cases, the misappropriation of something might be appropriate. Like I said before, a poor mechanic blames his tools, but a good mechanic can do a lot of work with kitchen utensils, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen that. Use a butter knife as a flathead screwdriver. We'll get the job done as long as it's not too critical. So I'm not saying the misappropriation of the language is essentially the cause of it. It's all of it. You know, that's why I keep saying, why bother? Food, clothing, and shelter. You're not going to be concerned about, you're not going to err philosophical even in the slightest if you have no food, clothing, and shelter.
Because you're not going to have the luxury, you mean?
Well, the body, the corpus, the carne, is going to overcome the spirit and the soul to the point where its needs will be primary to the other things, you know.
And that would be so, lawful, you mean?
Yeah, you're not going to be thinking. The example is a man that's dying of thirst,
mm-hmm.
walking down a road. He passes a guy standing on a pallet of gold bullion and money, let's say. He'll keep walking.
Well,
the moment he sees the guy with water, he kills the guy to get the water.
I was going to say, it might not
be lawful.
And
then he goes back and gets the money, right? So being,
So it's not really lawful necessarily if you're reduced to a primal state.
Yeah, but even in a sense, some primal state might say, I'd rather die than kill the man who's refusing to give me the water. That's primal also, you know.
That would be a pretty high...
I would rather die than kill the man to... And that's not a personal thing, but I'm just saying it as another perspective, right?
As a possibility, yeah, if one were...
Yeah, then kill the man for water. Yeah, that means that, you know, because, you know, ultimately... Have you, in the book of, I'll cite something, in the book of Daniel, there are three characters that are be thrown into the furnace because they didn't bow down to an idol, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Mm-hmm. And they said that our God can prevent us and protect us from your fire, but if he chooses not to, that's fine with us too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You see, to me, that's like the ultimate trust in them, you see.
Yeah, but that's a very high aspiration, right? We don't know until we're starving to death, really, like how surrendered we are to that.
You transcended the psychophysical then completely. That's all misunderstood. A lot of the Eastern philosophy about transcendence and ascension, that's all. Now, that's actually, when you read the ancient Prakrit and all that, it basically tells you that you are outside of yourself. Mm. And I'm not going to tell you where it is exactly, but this is the concept. And you're not going to find it because most of these gurus and people that, as sages that talk about it, don't care. They don't know either, right? Just like Christian gurus don't know that the Christ was not crucified, he was stoned to death, because they don't read the text. But basically, in the ancient Prakrit, it says you are outside of yourself. And when you transcend what you feel, in other words, your feeling and your opinion, and you keep that as your model, you will see clear enough to understand that when you lose the ability to see everything, it's still okay, because you're always outside of yourself, you see. Anyway. And, you know, have you ever heard me give the metaphor of the Buddha, what it's about? It's about living a life of integrity. When he was approached by a woman because he was known as a man of wisdom, the woman wanted to the Buddha to speak to the child, her child, who was eating too many sweets. Mm. And the Buddha said, well, come back in a month, and I'll speak to him then. And she leaves, and she comes back in a month, and he does speak to the child a month later. And then she returns to the Buddha and says, why did you tell me to come back in a month and you didn't speak to him then? He says, because when you first came to me, I was traveling and eating too many sweets myself.
Mm.
You see, in other words, talk your walk and walk your talk.
Mm-hmm.
How genuine would he be even to a child if he was eating too many sweets himself and told the child eating sweets, too many sweets is not good? And that's kind of disingenuous. Why? Because the child, you see, would the child know that? No, but you see, there's an air of integrity that goes beyond that, measures what we are actually doing.
Right.
Is the measurement and the reference of what we are doing.
So was that, I got the impression that you smoke cigarettes, is that right?
Oh yeah, I do enjoy tobacco. Hmm. I suck on cigarettes, I don't smoke. Smoking hurts because where there's smoke, there's fire.
What do you mean? You don't like them?
No, no one is really smoking, let's say, because if you're smoking means that you're burning.
Yeah.
So I'm sucking on the cigarette. The cigarette is smoking. I'm sucking.
And then you're flicking a lighter, because I hear a lighter flick from time
sure.
to time.
So years ago when I would go on an airplane, people would say smoking or non-smoking. I said, well, the one that flies better, of course.
All right.
Yeah, I enjoy coffee. I enjoy good teas. I enjoy tobacco.
But how do you enjoy tobacco if you're just... holding a cigarette?
Well, cigarette. Yeah, I enjoy the organic variety.
Wait, but you're smoking it or you're not smoking?
Yeah, well, I'm just baking. I'm being facetious about it. Yes, what you call smoking, yes.
What I call smoking. Why
don't smoking, but because you're not really... Well, in order to be smoking means you're burning, right?
You yourself. Oh, I see. Yeah, you're being facetious.
Gotcha. Yeah. Facetious, yes, that's all right.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah.
Well, I just brought it up because...
It's like the airplanes, smoking or non-smoking, back in the 70s, they would ask you that.
Yeah.
And the answer to that, you know, most people think is, you know, which one do you smoke, cigarette? And I would say just the one that flies better, of course. Because if a plane is smoking, you know, it's usually a hint that it's mechanically in trouble.
But so how does that square with your philosophy about health and maintenance of the body and all that stuff?
Well, that's an interesting psychophysical question that might air philosophical. Where does one negotiate or compromise their known physical ability for their likes and wants?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I know it's hurting my health, but I like it enough that I'm willing to put up with it if it does. I'll give you a personal example. If I find that it causes irritation and compromises my health, I stop.
Mm-hmm.
But if I stop completely, would I be much healthier? Yes and no. I've spoke to some medical researchers, the kind of research you'll never get, not even on the stupid rectangle. You know what I mean about the stupid rectangle, yeah?
Yeah.
They did an experiment. They strapped some tobacco They subjected various mammals to smoke, and some of them, about 12%, came down with what they call irritation in the lungs and what they call cancerous tissue.
Hmm.
And then they had the ones that didn't ever have that and were sequestered, and they had less than 0.5%. So you have 25 times more chance when you smoke. But the ones that did not smoke the tobacco and they just had it strapped onto them as a harness had an 8% irritation of cancer also.
Just
having it on you. So if you just walked around with a pack of cigarettes on you all day for 10 years, you have an 8% chance of getting cancer.
That's weird. Now,
well, because it's by induction.
How is it by induction? Because the body doesn't absorb anything, according
right,
to you.
Right,
so
it's induction. No, according to your body, and I'm just the only one speaking on it, sorry. Say that. It's pathetic to say that.
Define induction, then.
Have you ever seen an electrician come into a house years ago? If they wanted to probe the wires, they had to open the outlet and stick a probe directly on the wire. Now they just have this pocket handheld thing, and they hold a button, and they go in proximity, and then it starts beeping. Oh, you have an electrical wire here?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen now I know the cars and the cell phones, you don't have to plug them in. You just put them on a pad, and it charges the phone. Or the toothbrushes, the Sonicare toothbrush, you put it in a charging dock, and there's no obvious terminal contact. Two coils work that way. Transformers that take high voltage and reduce it to low voltage work through induction. If you understand the term, if you heard of a man called Rudolf Hoschka, the term vitamins that the people are touting, he was the father of that research that we know about, and he came about it by stating that certain foods prevent certain illnesses like scurvy and things, you know, like people on ships, we know if they didn't have citrate, right? Vitamin, yeah. So he said that certain foods have a certain vitality. Maybe I can just extract the vitality of that food by making extracts.
Mm-hmm.
And he would apply them to certain creatures that had deficiencies, and he noticed that the extract, not only the food, was where the vitality was. And then he noticed that if he didn't even apply it to the creature but just kept it near, very close by, it almost had the same effect.
Right.
Through glass. You see, right?
So that indicates that the body is antipathetic to tobacco, or vice versa.
Not only tobacco, but to anything. The body. Okay, have you ever heard of a blood alcohol level?
Mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous. That would be what people think about it. When you drink alcohol, your body recognizes that it's something it could reproduce internally, and it reproduces it internally. And it shows up in the blood. If it were to go through the intestine or the stomach, you would die from sepsis, which is septicemia, which is a medical condition, internal poisoning, internal bleeding.
Mm.
Right? Okay, and also you would lose your vacuum if it was porous. Just like if you have a porous bicycle tire or car tire, it ceases to function, does it? Right? A flat tire is not functioning.
Yeah.
So the process of the body creating the alcohol is what gets you drunk. For example, have you ever heard of someone drinking another person under the table? They can handle their alcohol much better than another person.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're biologically the same, pretty much, except for various obvious physical features and blood types, maybe. But one person is not as susceptible to the effect of the body producing alcohol than the other. The other person, when his body produces alcohol internally, is highly susceptible to that reaction, which makes them drunk at a lower alcohol level.
Right, like Native Americans, supposedly.
Sure, just like, for example, now if you know this is all electrical function, you can stand in front of a monitor with one of your feet exposed on a particular plate of metal holding on to another piece of metal or another, and you could actually pulse that monitor with a certain frequency and a little bit of sound, and someone who's never smoked marijuana or cannabis in their lives will show THC in their blood, and they will feel high.
Hmm.
And also you will see blood alcohol, very small amount, of course. You can induce this into the body, just like you can induce a live band onto magnetic tape, can you not?
Right.
Microphone?
Yeah.
It takes an apparatus. If I give you the Beatles White Album, what does that mean? To a material scientist, he'll look at it and say, "This, I don't understand what you're talking about. I see a disc of plastic with grooves of this material composition. I don't understand what you're talking about," if he's just a material scientist. But you could just take it to any teenager's, you know, put it in the computer if it's a DVD, and he'll say, "Yes, this is the Beatles White Album," or something, you know, what you see?
Mm.
because he's not interested in the material. He's interested in what the material is carrying on an intangible level. Can you, if I took the label off of DVDs or on a format and I showed you all these, can you tell me what songs are on there? Without playing them, you can't. This is, I've seen enough clinical research studies that they actually deny things that they cannot reproduce or produce in a clinical study in a laboratory. They actually will deny the sky is blue because they cannot reproduce it in the laboratory. I know this sounds ridiculous to you and I, and if you start studying the what's called legal or the justice system, they have some legal concepts that are quite ridiculous as well. If you might be familiar with some, maybe not. So. It's just like when you go to a physicist, define a field, tells you it's a wave. What's light? It's a wave. A wave is not what something is. A wave is what something does. If I'm waving at you, what am I doing? I'm waving. Am I a wave? They cannot explain anything because it's against your mental model. Will not be able to grasp it. For example, the reason you will not have real education is because no one will go and will never be recognized as real education. It will be recognized as something so far and irrelevant to the current mental model, you see. Mm-hmm. That's why I keep saying everything now has gotten to the point of irreparability, unrehabilitatable. People talk about fixing this, fixing that. It's gone a little late to fix it now. It has to be replaced.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying this. This is a fair, objective evaluation. I'm not promoting its replacement because no man can do it.
You have talked in such a way that you want to introduce information to people that they can apply it and improve conditions?
For the sake of efficiency. If you're inefficient, let me just give you a hypothetical example. I'll stay very general. If you're inefficient with something, does that even sound good? No, it doesn't even sound good. Inefficient communication. You've seen, we have ditzy blondes back east in New York. Oh, she's a real ditzy blonde. She talks and talks. She doesn't say anything.
It could
be any haircut.
Well, wasn't that something?
That's inefficient communication. She's saying a lot, isn't she?
Yeah.
The point's not good. Ross, can you be inefficient with an automobile? Yes. Can you be inefficient with the way you prepare things? Yes.
Yeah.
It's for the sake of efficiency.
Right. So it seems that was something Sam was trying to address with you in terms of him feeling that you weren't being as efficient as you could be with your streaming, for example.
No, not at all, because this is not... albeit how much I disdain the concept of a group in this society, like as illustrated by Gustave Le Bon and being a moron magnet, I have worked in industry where when you're given a task to solve a problem, using simple terms here, you're given enough support to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no support in this, and I never expected it.
Well, even without going there. Even without going to the group thing, that just in terms of how much attention, time, and energy you put into
hundreds of hours
claiming about morons, complaining about morons, and so on and so forth, as opposed to other things that you could be addressing, how scattershot your presentation is, it doesn't seem to be streamlined or structured in such a way for maximum efficiency.
But here's the interesting thing: you could read any scripture. From the Hopi Indian to what they call the Bible to the Prakrit to any language, and you will see that it is a redundant, albeit coherent once you look at it in its totality, but if you take little pieces of it, it keeps changing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pixels. You know, if you start looking at something very close, it doesn't make sense. If you're in front of a monitor and you start looking at pixels,
right,
you don't see it. Yeah. So, but it's, you cannot deny that, a high-definition monitor has more pixels than a less-definition monitor. So I'm putting out a lot of high-definition pixels that you're going to have to put together and stand back and see the image.
Right. Why would I, though? Why would I want to?
I don't know. Maybe it's not for you, then. It just so happens the way that I'm doing it, because it's just about covering everything.
Well, yeah, but now, why would people want to? I mean, this is back to this point about the cult, my comments about cult, which went... To be clear, that I wasn't suggesting that you were trying to create a cult, or even that you were in danger of creating one. I was talking about the way in which what you do affects the individual, like if it actually impacts them in such a way that they begin thinking cultishly. Let's say I'm oversimplifying now, but
I have no control over that.
Well, though, you have control over your expression, though.
Well, then we go into what's called neurolinguistic programming, where you make,
yes,
where you always have to be correcting what you're saying so it comes through objectively, and then you'll be garnering another cultish group that likes that, like the Vulcans. You know, if you have a group of Vulcans, using a Star Trek analogy, if you're always bringing up logic, you'll eventually open the door and you'll see they'll all be all Vulcans in there, very few humans.
Mm-hmm.
But if you always bring up emotion and altruism and hope, you'll open the door, there'll be no Vulcans, they'll be full of humans. You see, so why narrow it again? Why do you want to be a moron magnet? And I'm using moron as a medical term, a technical term. You don't really want to hear me use pejoratives, right? And no one does. It doesn't sound good. Let me give you an example. What inspired me to just say things like that is I've been in the company of what you call chiefs of industry, politicians, leaders, and things like that. I'm not going to state who, and people, you know, I don't need to prove anything. I don't even find it distasteful to even say that. Give you an example. Here in the American Midwest, I was at someone's house, and they were having a gathering, and they were using a certain language I didn't understand. And I asked someone to define those terms, and they were calling people, they have names for people, you know, the masses, like we would say, if I say the great unwashed, yeah, you could say that's what they think of the common people. But they were using terms that I'm not even going to use. Because I needed them to be defined. And I said, everything that's coming out of – these are people that are running what you consider to be industry, right, and finance and things like that. they think so little of you. And at one point I said, why do they speak that way? I said, oh, when you start, you know, dealing with things that they have to do, you will be using the same language. And I said, no, I won't.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't. I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
But I do bring across the air that very similarly that you'll find in Scripture as well. You won't find any Scripture that says anything positive about mankind. There might be some individuals that through their actions, deeds, and they've been chosen, have been spoken of as being positive, right? Mm.
Besides the part about being made in God's image, at least.
The God's image, plural, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Right, and I've discussed that also. That's misunderstood.
Okay, so but bringing it back to this thing of how you address people, your audience, and
I don't have an audience. Sorry, I don't have an audience.
Well, you do. You do. I mean, technically, you got people who listen to your streams, and then you got the people that you're talking to or talking at.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you factor into this the question of how we address people and how we interact with them determines how they experience themselves, not just you, and what you draw out of them. Like when we speak to people, like you're to some degree, I would say to less a degree than I would like, you're responding, you're expressing yourself in different ways than you normally do just because you're talking to me, right? Very, very marginally, but to some degree or whatever, what you're saying is going to be a response to me, and what I say is a response to you. So there's a potential within that space of dialogue for the transmission to get stronger, for the signal to get stronger, and to reduce the noise, the delusion, the bullshit, the moronic, you know, whatever limitations I have, you know, whatever category you want to put me in. It doesn't help if you address me as a moron, obviously. Right, you got to factor in that I've got limitations and all the rest of it, but you also,
right,
I would hope, want to speak to the best in me in the hope that that would actually bring it more out, bring it more to the surface by bringing it more into my own awareness.
Sure. So what I would suggest on that is, if you feel inclined to do that,
mm-hmm,
and invest in it, you should wholeheartedly do that. Yeah.
Well, that is what I do. Like, I work in a thrift store, so I have to deal with morons in your vernacular, you know, every day.
Well, I didn't make up the word moron.
I know. But you employ it in a way that I wouldn't. I would have done when I was 20.
That's fine.
But now that I'm 50, you know, I've felt that I needed to go in the other direction and just try and see the value in every individual I speak to or interact with, and let them know or communicate to them that they have value in some
that's
sense,
fine.
Right?
And yeah,
that's for my own sanity. That's not because I want to be a good guy or a saint or an altruistic person. It's because
that's
I've got to get through 4 hours, you know, a shift working in a thrift store. And, you know, I can hide behind the laptop and just be like a machine, but I don't know that whoever comes in the store isn't a god in disguise.
But that's personal. I'm not addressing the person. You know, if for example, if we have a truck full of gray marbles and there's a blue and a green one in there also, I could say that pretty accurately that's a truck full of gray marbles, and it's not pure. It's not reagent grade because there might be some other colors thrown in there, but you can sell it as a truck. For example, someone has a gray marble.
But if I'm addressing
the blue, if I pick up the blue marble and I hold it up, or the red marble, I won't tell someone that it's gray.
I know. But human beings aren't marbles, and human beings aren't just one thing.
But human beings are moronic, and there are a very few
that are not. They're traumatized. That's how I look at it.
I'm stating a fact. I'm not going back to their history. I'm not representing them as their attorney.
But it's the fact that they're traumatized too, and that's a root
that's
fact.
Not, that's,
they wouldn't be moronic if they hadn't been traumatized.
Sure, but I do get into the trauma, and I do get into the aspect of people's refusal to address it.
Yeah, okay, they have responsibility, I'm not denying that. But when I say they're not marbles, I mean that they're not fixed entities that are just one color, like the individual...
Sure, but those traumas I view as tools. You're familiar with the Pavlovian training. You ring the bell, you feed the dog.
Of course, yeah.
Okay, but are you familiar with the history of that, where that was near a river that overflowed? and the dogs were below level and they nearly drowned, and they actually had to save the dogs by putting them underwater and pulling them up. If you've been around dogs, you know how traumatic that could be.
Right.
And then once they had restored them into another laboratory, they noticed that all of that Pavlovian training was gone. They'd ring the bell, none of them would salivate. Because when you subject someone to training or Pavlovian conditioning, then to erase that, you subject them to a high level of trauma, and it erases all that. That's why the media does what they do regarding each modality through history. Yeah?
Say more about that.
Well, for example, if the Americans want to go to war with the Japanese, the American government wants to go to war with the Japanese, and the American people are not having it, you just make some movies showing Japanese actors raping American women, and then all of a sudden the recruitment rate goes up 90%.
Right.
Because it's traumatic for an American to see, who's nationalistic, to see one of his own nationalists being raped by another extra national, you see, so that's trauma to them.
Mild level, but yeah.
Yeah, but if you showed them the Japanese were having tea, then that's not trauma. They say, oh, fine, then even more reason not to go to war, you see.
Yeah, yeah. So you can use trauma to manipulate people.
That's why they keep showing what they do in media and in church. Why do they have a guy nailed to a cross wearing a diaper?
But I'm not sure you can use trauma to straighten people out. I don't think that's...
It's not an illusion. It's a very real thing that affects the psyche, and it's being used on you.
But it can be used therapeutically, I'm saying.
No, I think it's
a lie.
Well, therapeutically, a lot of what they call therapeutic is actually quite destructive. Do you think taking experimental drugs is therapeutic? Do you think electric shock?
Of course not.
Yeah. Someone says, well, Greek, I like listening to your stuff, even though I don't understand it. I say, oh, then it must have a therapeutic effect then, not a cognitive one, you see. You know what I mean? So that's fine, too.
Well, yeah, I'm still on the fence about that. That's why I'm talking to you. Yeah. Because sometimes... It matters to me. I mean, where I put my attention, and whether it's, nourishing me and enhancing my experience of myself, which is back to my point about human beings not being marbles, like the way we interact with them and the climate that we provide for them, the psychic climate, determines how they experience themselves and how they are. I mean, not in a massive way.
Marbles, but factually, you're either someone's pet or you're someone's dinner spiritually. Factually, majority of the people are someone's dinner. In other words, they're feeding off of you, your energy.
Fair enough.
Or you're someone's pet. That's what the group or the cult is. You ever heard of teacher's pet, right?
Yeah.
The leadership returns with gratitude for their presence.
But I mean,
and their interest, even though it's all bullshit.
It's still circumstantial, isn't it? I mean, there's still aspects of the totality or the gods.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever
there's 100 shades of gray, but let's not we forget that gray is a compound of white and black.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's dim enough, the gray does look very dark and be black. And if it's bright enough, the gray could appear to be white.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the ultimate thing is, are you doing the right thing? For example, I've gotten about 900 emails in the past year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
800, about 900, almost nine, about all but two or three have been positive. All of them are positive.
Okay, and, but what kind of positive is the thing, right?
Oh, I never considered, for example, the body having a vacuum, and I understood that now it made sense to me when I have a wound to wrap it really tight, almost critically tight to the point where, you know, it's not good, right? And then release it, and I see the healing happening very quickly.
Yeah.
I'd never thought of that. Thank you very much. Oh, I never knew how to cook rice before. I was always afraid of it. As a matter of fact, I didn't even like rice. And I listened to you talk about making rice, and now I make the best rice. And, yeah, even someone from a restaurant said we've improved. Yeah, timekeeping. I do planting, or I do fishing. You know, the fish migrate on a time schedule that's not the Pope's work schedule. You've heard me say the Pope's work schedule, right?
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah, and these people, they've developed, these commercial fishermen have developed radar to follow these fish, but they've noticed that within a two-week spread during the year, they come across there. Is it because your calendar could be off as much as 2 weeks in a year, meaning the real day where the position of the Earth is to the sun, to the moon, to the stars? Mm-hmm. The fish don't care about what you call a day. But if you record the day that you've encountered that school of fish using the moon phases and the month count, you'll go back there next year. And I had someone report back. They were doing cod fishing. They were going to go out in a few days because it was approaching that time. And he had heard what I was saying. We're talking about, you know, a 400-foot boat with a crew of 30 people. You know, it costs $1 million a day, you know, kind of thing. This is not trivial, right? Maybe it is to some. You know, $1 million-a-day operation could be trivial, but I don't know. Depends who's relative, right? But anyway, he says, no, this tomorrow is the day that we found them. We need to go out right now. And the captain says, well, you know what? I wanted to speed up this operation anyway to test these new pumps. So let's go out by tomorrow. And guess what? They got the front end of the school, not the second or third one that passed by. And they can tell that by the maturity. You know, fish have a culture. You know how dogs, you know, they have the alpha dog lead. Fish also have...
Mm-hmm.
You
alpha
know, various.
Fish.
Yeah, there's certain fish that go first, you know, like tuna, you know, they're always. Yeah, anyway, it's another thing. So he emailed me back and he's saying, Greek, this is the best catch we've ever had in history, thanks to you. And I'm like, thanks to me? Well, okay, well, let's be real rash about it and rationale. What am I getting for it? Do I get a cut of the catch?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, I think if I brought that up, that would never fly. I said, yeah. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
You see? Oh, are you doing it for money? No. How about I just, you know, like when I have a used car and I get another car, you know, I give it away. You know, people say, oh, I'm going to sell the old one and offset the cost of the new one, right? You know, why go through all that hassle? I don't want to start meeting people and telling me what they like or don't like about the car and haggling on the price. I've gotten 8 years or 9 years use out of it. It's paid for itself to me. And recently, you know, I was doing that, and a neighbor was laughing at me. He says, we got another car. He says, well, what are you going to do with that one? Give it away? Ha, 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 ha. Like, you're really stupid for giving it away.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I shouldn't even be saying because these are personal things.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, I'm being mocked at by those around me because I'm giving a car away. And they're like, well, who are you going to give it away to? Someone in need?
Uh-huh.
But someone in need who can care for it, not someone who's broke that's going to run out of gas and leave it on the side of the road and be, you see, you have to give it away responsibly to a responsible party as well, don't you?
Yeah, that's right.
You see, so I have a lot of back experience in history that I don't bring forward.
Mm. Why don't you like to talk about personal stuff?
Because why should I?
Well, why don't you want to?
Like because it's not relevant.
Well, not relevant
I'm
to what or to who?
When you've heard of like with like and of the concept of parity. If you're addressing a culture, you address it on a cultural level.
You're talking to the culture, you're not talking to human beings.
No, not at all.
You're not.
No, I would rather...
It's you and the culture.
Oh, because then
it sounds pretty lonely. No wonder you're so pissed off.
Yeah, good.
No more. The moon in the window.
It's all, you know, some people, I've had some people do pilgrimages, you know, they say I'm in Tucson or whatever, that's close enough, and they fly in from different parts of the world, you know, I'm serious. Mm-hmm. And I've had four in the past 2 years, and they just call me, say I'm at the airport at Tucson. I said, what are you doing here? He says, I wanted to come and see you. I said, why?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they, and I do spend some time with them. They're like, you're completely different. You're like so, you know, whatever, you know, very different than, you're not mad. You're very kind. You know, I'm not going to, you know, now it sounds like I'm, you know.
Anyway. Yeah. I get it. Yeah. I mean, I got you're that impression.
You know, they're like, I'll throw another thing. It's like, wow, you've paid for everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've, you know, so, and I send them off with gifts.
But why do you address the, I mean, that baffles me. Why do you separate human beings from the culture or vice versa? Like, oh, how do you?
You don't separate them, and you do separate them. In other words, when you're addressing a culture of headhunters, if you're going to start addressing that they have purple polka dot wallpaper in their kitchen, that's only relevant to those that have that. But if you're addressing shrunken heads, you're addressing all of them.
Yeah, and but why would you want to talk to shrunken heads?
No, you're addressing the issue of shrunken heads to the society of headhunters.
Okay.
The main points that I bring up is that your body is not a filter bag. You're on the Pope's work schedule. You don't even know how to keep time.
Yeah.
You have no money. You're on a credit-based economy because all of your governments are bankrupt and they have to give you credit to function. But the attorneys have determined that if they tell you that, no one's going to want to work. That's how, you know, piss poor in terms of, you know, responsibility you've been determined to be. Whether you are or not is not the point. Those that lead you have determined that they have to lie to you, right? You know nothing about your history. You don't want to go back more than 100 years. You don't know how to manage water. You can't even define the weather.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You see? Birds don't fly. Birds are flown.
Yeah.
Bird will not fly in a vacuum. You put a little gas air mask on a bird, he'll flap his wings. He's not going anywhere. And if he tries it, if you leave him in there long enough, he'll just won't even try anymore.
Okay, so yeah, this is the list of radical info that each one, you know, is a rabbit hole unto itself. But from what you've said, the reason you're presenting all this stuff is basically so that you have got a clear record. You can say, well, look, I told people, so don't blame it on me.
Yeah, right? That's true, because if you're doing good for selfish reasons, you're still doing good also, aren't
you? Okay.
If you gave $1 million, let's say Canadian or American, what they call dollars, to an orphanage, because if you spent $1 million on advertising in newspapers, no one would look at it. But if you got the publicity that you gave, everyone would consider it, you see? The company gave $1 million to the orphanage is not because their charity is because they'll get more out of their advertising money that way than if they spent $1 million on front page cover.
Well, it's debatable that that's doing good, though.
But either
way, they're
doing good.
It depends on where the money goes. Well, no, it's debatable.
Well, then it depends on the orphanage. We'll pick something else. Let's say starving people. Let's not call it an orphanage. Let's say call it giving,
okay, well,
you know,
I'll use our example. We have this thrift store. Once a week, we buy food and we feed it to the hungry and the homeless. That's a good business policy for us, although it makes a lot of people in the town dislike us. But nonetheless, you know, are we doing it good because, you know, what are our reasons? They're all kind of mixed up together. But the end result,
it's fine.
One of them is that people are getting fed.
Well, the competitors that will not like that because they didn't pull a stunt like that. You know, the corporation that gave $1 million to the orphanage?
Mm-hmm.
See, their marketing people didn't determine that.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, marketing people wouldn't determine that because they can't collect fees for that. But here's the point. Years ago, more than 15 years ago when I was discussing these things, or about that time, maybe a little bit more, people would say, you need to write a book. And I said, well, in order to write a book, I have to presume that people can read with comprehension. Writing a book is a good thing, but when put that out, that you're presuming that people can read with comprehension.
Yeah,
you have to make that.
When you talk and stream, you're presuming that people will be able to flatten this stuff out and apply it in a way that is rooted and grounded, I think.
Not all people, very few, and very few do. Only four or five.
Exactly my point. And that's why, for me, to try and to make an arbitrary distinction between personal information and impersonal can be self-sabotaging, because I actually want to know stuff about you or get a sense of you, not because I'm curious, but because I want the context for this stuff. Like, it's that to me it roots it in something that is real and tangible, however mundane or trivial, right?
Other people see it right away. Other people do some research. Some people want it given to them like you're asking. That's up to you.
Well, no, it isn't. It's up to you how you present it.
Yeah,
and then
but
I'm
it is
one of
up
your
to
listeners
me.
Who's saying, right. I mean, I don't really expect to change what you're doing by making
right.
any of these suggestions, but that's how I have a dialogue with you, is by sharing my experience of what you're doing, or at least that's one aspect. Seeing as the focus is on you and the information and so on and so forth, there's so much of the latter, the information, that we could, you know, have a 3-hour chat for a year and we wouldn't get through all of these bullet points that you're presenting.
That's right.
So then I want to keep bringing the focus back to you, which ironically is where you don't want it to be, in a sense, or at least not the personal you. It's not like I want personal
right,
information
because
about you.
I'm not like
either.
Yo-Yo Ma, the cello player who was mastered the cello at 9 or 10, and he... You can just put the cello up on stage, and anyone try to play it, no one's going to play it like this cello master. I don't want to. That's. I'm not. I am not producing anything that is unique to me, other than the persona, right?
No, I know, but it's coming through you. You're the medium, and the message and the medium are pretty hard to extricate. I don't think
sure.
they can be, right?
So I happen to be a point source for it at the moment, let's say. You know, a small point source that emanates, you know, a field in a let's say, more 360 or 180-degree cone or view, right? So... That might be, and it's unfortunate because, and I'm embarrassed to be human, because most of the stuff that I mention, you can access immediately this as a source, right? When I say, for example, timekeeping and the Pope's work schedule, some people, like, it hits them across the head like a baseball bat. How come I never saw that before? So simplistic. Other people want to know, go and study the fine detail of the Papal Bull of 1585,
mm-hmm.
and other people start looking at various calendrical systems and how it evolved, and that's fine. That's their prerogative, but I'm telling you, you don't know how to keep time, period.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, other than the subject bullshit, and mm-hmm. it is bullshit, because not because I say it, because they say it's bullshit.
Yeah. So. Well, okay, so on the example of timekeeping, that is an area that I'm interested in. We could talk about that for many hours. I do want to find out more. But before I jump down that rabbit hole or commit to it, I want to find out more about you. You see, I have a history of following dodgy leaders, of getting sucked into dodgy information matrices, which you know all about. And whether you like it or not, you're participating in that. Like, you can say that everything
on
the
internet... This is a leaderless.
No, I know, but you're on the internet. You're on the internet.
Well,
you're
unfortunately.
Disseminating on the internet. So when you say everything on the internet is bullshit, you have to include yourself. It's not as though there's a dividing line there. You've been on the Freeman Show, for fuck's sake, pardon my French. But that's about as moronic,
well,
you know,
he didn't
alternate
air the last
media
one because...
as I could think of. And so you chose not to badmouth anyone. You know, I don't personally like to do that. But seeing as you do talk about that a lot, like, why don't you walk your talk? Why would you do the Freeman Show when you must know that that's just as big a bullshit, you know, matrix as any of the other ones that you're not naming?
Hmm. Well, because why then I'd have to get into what was going on before to get me on the Freeman Show, right?
Right.
So, what makes you think that I didn't tell Freeman that it's all bullshit and he agreed to it anyway?
Yeah.
It is.
But
so
you
that
didn't
doesn't
tell him
mean
on
that
the show, though, it seems like.
Well, maybe it was edited out.
That's possible. But he invited you back. So that's
yeah, and
tell
again,
you
and
something.
He's not airing anymore. That he has more interviews than he's, because it's not conducive to accommodating the audience.
No, and it shouldn't be. I absolutely agree.
But,
you know,
but the reason why I say it's just like I say, I'm taking a cross section of it right now of the internet. Why I'm on the internet? Because it's efficient. I would rather not be, but it is the most efficient way to do it in terms of doing it in print. Right, and sending it out and publishing it on pulp, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, physical pulp paper. This seems to be the convention, just like, for example, money is now electronic convention versus paper convention or substance before that.
Mm-hmm.
So, what I do say is it is all crap right now. Just like this is a truck of gray marbles, there might be some right others in there, whatever tolerance. Based on the tolerance that if you were to put a wide brush, statistically, if you ask someone to count all the grains of sand in the beach, they're going to give you a statistical count, because if you give it accurate to the grain. What if you're challenged and you have to go recount every grain? So you have to say I've been saying for years, statistically, it's all bullshit. There's some exceptions, but the exceptions are so minimal that they're not. It's not. If you said all of it statistically, it's very accurate from a statistician's point of view. Mm-hmm. You see, and that is a fact. What the internet is good for, it's a hybrid of the telephone book, a reference manual. Years ago, I used to carry a little blue reference manual that had conversions and charts and things, right? If you work in engineering or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. melting points of metals, hardnesses. Now you do it on the rectangle, the phone, right? It's a convention has changed from paper. So what the internet is really, I've mentioned also, it's a microphone test. You know, before the show goes on, the crew comes up, says microphone test 1, 2, 3. That's all you've gotten on the internet. The purpose of the internet is to evolve audio and video communication cheaply and instantly. So in the future, mm-hmm. anyone and everyone in the planet will have access to events happening anywhere in the world almost with immediacy.
Right.
That's the purpose of the internet. It's not the information age, right?
Mm, right.
That's bullshit, just like the space age. How many of you went into space?
Okay, so, yeah, well, that's a whole sidetrack. But so you're
how
saying,
many of you are being informed?
You're describing the internet as a platform for a grand deception. Is that right? And then
a grand deception and a grand evidentiary of no one can say I didn't see or hear about this event in the future. Remember, the last thing the gods want after reincarnation or resurrection, after you're brought back, is a bunch of sniveling humans saying, you came and mopped us up with great force and destruction when you didn't give us a chance.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
That's a metaphor. It's a powerful one.
It's a metaphor. Whether it's powerful or not, I'm sticking to it.
Okay, so you're applying that to your own function or whatever, as in if you're going to disseminate stuff and say, you know, I've disseminated what I had to know, you want it to go out to the whole world. Like, you don't want to just do flyers and post them on the, you know, the telegraph poles in your local community anonymously.
I have done that before in the past, by the way, regarding issues in the community.
So you do want to reach more people. It's not just about covering your ass, because if it was covering your ass, you'd just
I don't want to reach. Once I've established that, I want to do it organically.
Mm-hmm.
Do I want to go out and buy a 4-section file drawer to file all the stuff that I need? Yes, that's beneficial, yes. But also, do I know for sure if I have a table with all the papers stacked organically? I know that the lower I go on the stack, it's in time.
Mm-hmm.
And I know if it's important, I'm going to set it in a separate basket. You see, which one has more organic or natural immediacy is what looks like a messy desk versus the triple collated file cabinet category, you see?
Right. I kind of see.
So in other words, reaching more people is irrelevant at this time, because I've always said there's only going to be a small handful of people that can use or grasp any of this.
Yeah, understood. But if you want to find those people, or rather if you want it to reach those people, then presumably you need to reach more people, because they're all scattered about the globe.
Well, yes, I know for sure over 100,000 people have heard at least 1 hour of Greek speak, and only about 4 or 5 have made an attempt to contact
mm-hmm.
out of 100,000. So if you multiply that times 10, that's 1 million, so it's 40 out of 1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay, so you got the numbers there. So
yeah, those are pretty good numbers. Here locally, I've spoken to several thousand people, and only 2 were interested afterwards, after I gave contact information.
Right.
You see, so it's a very small percentage. I'm quite satisfied with the number. I actually, from a responsibility point of view, if I knew more people were interested, I would have to do what you mentioned earlier about the lack of being streamlined, the lack of coherence. I would have to be, you know, put together in a more coherent format, you know, that people are used to seeing, you know, with contents and more development.
Mm-hmm. Well, right? you know, like a really basic thing, and I don't necessarily want you to follow this because I don't know whether what you're presenting is positive or not, but is simply to have somebody do the notes for each streaming, so then you've got a list of the content for all of your archives. That would enormously, then it's cross-referenceable and all the rest of it, searchable.
Sure.
That's a really basic, yeah.
I have several people offer that, and they all fell to the wayside, you know.
Right, they didn't follow through.
No, they didn't follow through. I'm not going to do it because, like, for example, by another hour or two, I have to go pick up a box of things that are being sent to me, an industrial thing that has to be modified because the engineers don't understand the drawing. And I said, well, it has to be modified a certain way. And they had the brilliant idea. Then why don't you do the first one and then we'll copy it? I said, that's a great idea. Why don't you ship the device to me? I will do the modifications. I'll include notes and I'll do a follow-up on it. And then I'll send it back to you, right? You understand what I'm saying, right? So, yeah, and that's where I'm dedicating my time to, right? It's work, you know. In other words, for me to start putting it all together myself, I'm going to have to sit down an hour or two or three a day until I get enough of it put together, edit it, polish it up, put it together, put it up, and then maintain it, right? Yeah, fine. If you want to do it, fine. Like I told Sam, you set it up. You tell me what you need from me, and if I can do it, time-wise allotted or anything else, financial, whatever, I'll do it. Oh, yeah, Greek, I'll do it. I'll go set it. Nothing. Right?
Yeah.
Other people have said it, too. So it's not worth much,
no, but
obviously.
That's, no, I mean that's not where I'm positioning myself. Obviously, I'm an outsider who's interested in what you're doing. And
it's fine.
Wanting to find out more about it and about yourself, even before putting this on the podcast or whatever. I mean, you can certainly use it, but I'm undecided about whether I want to make more people aware of what you're doing. Not that I've got some massive platform or anything like that, but I got some very serious minded people, you can probably laugh internally at that, but anyway, by my gauge, who give positive feedback to what I'm doing.
That's good. That makes the earth go round, right?
Well, it keeps me feeling like my life is meaningful anyway. And
rain and bullshit keep the flowers going, yeah.
And to me, I mean, like, where I'm coming from and talking to you about these things is obviously from where I'm situated and why I do what I do, so far as I'm conscious of it, which is making connections to other living beings, other humans, meaningful connections that enrich my experience of myself, let's say. Okay, so yeah, I can do that in the thrift store in a very superficial way, as in I can just develop more tolerance for my fellow man, let's put it that way, whereas what I do on the internet does seem to lead to, you know, much richer, deeper connections that bring about some sort of understanding of stuff. I don't know what it's worth, but I think
I'm not going to provide that, because now I'm going to have to talk about the things that I do, and that's not why I'm speaking public.
Wait, you're not going to provide what?
Personal aspects of what I would like to see in people and how I'd like to help people, because that is secondary to the people being able to help themselves.
Well, no, I think you're making a categorization that I wouldn't make. Like, you and I think you said this in the conversation, you and I, it doesn't really matter to a great deal what we're talking about, what we're focusing on verbally or mentally, because there's some connection that's occurring just by us hooking up. Would you agree?
Yes, it's beyond what we consider to be psychophysical, yes.
Yeah, that's the thing I'm talking about. Something can happen when two sentient beings come together and have a dialogue that may only be, you know, dimly observable on the surface of the dialogue itself, but it'll be tangible in some way.
Well, it's tangible, although it's purely spiritual right now, because, I mean, there's no physical interaction at all, other than the devices that we're using.
Well, you know, I was thinking about that recently, and that's actually not true, because we're both situated on the earth, and so we're connected, just as if, you know, my leg brushed against your leg, we were wearing trousers,
sure.
You would still say we'd made contact, right?
But we're not, because then we would all be connected on a 7.5 or 8 billion level. I'm saying right now the interaction qualitatively and quantitatively that we're having is purely spiritual, meaning non-physical.
But we are connected to the 7.5 billion.
You speak for yourself. I've been working on the past decade to disconnect myself.
Well, but what ever deep level? I mean, however deep you have to
dig. On the deepest level possible, because, for example, when you're part of that group or on any level, you end up communicating on the level that they've been manipulated to do. Oh, how are the Mets? How's the weather? How's Donald Trump? How's this new drug? How are the vaccines? All bullshit.
Right.
When you pull yourself away from them, when you come back, you could no longer communicate to them on their level. You can only inform them.
Or you can pretend to, well, not pretend, but you can communicate to them on their level while being aware of what's going on at the deeper levels.
It's disingenuous to me.
No, well, this is what I've had to be trained in working in the thrift store. I mean, imagine, have you ever done retail work?
Oh, yeah, I've had retail businesses.
Because
yeah.
So hour after hour, people are coming in and saying, how are you? Not wanting to hear the answer. They'll start talking to you about their stuff. You don't
want
to hear it, right? That's culture.
Culture. In Japan, they would never do that.
Okay.
In Bushido, when you ask someone, how are you, even if they're dying of stomach cancer, they're going to say, I'm fine.
Okay, but I'm not in Japan. I'm in British Columbia. That's the culture.
That's why I'm saying it's cultural. You're around the headhunters. They want to know about how many shrunken heads they can get.
They're treasure hunters coming into the thrift store looking
for
shite, right? So and they're seriously damaged people, and if I treat them with contempt, it's bad for business. It's also bad for my soul. Let's say, So for me, it's always finding that possibility of connecting to people at a deep level, regardless of where they're at in awareness. It's not disingenuous, because I know that there's a living soul underneath all that trauma crust.
That's fine. That's that's on a personal level, of course. I do that often here, locally. You've heard me say that if half of the people in the world each helped only one person, it takes care of the whole rest of the world, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, if half of the people of the world just helped just one person each, that means everyone's taken care of now. That's not a lot to ask for. If you ask for one person to help one person,
no.
Is that too much?
No, and it's very
that's
simple.
That's all that's required.
It's very simple, right? But it's not easy at all. It's not easy to meet somebody in that distorted cultural monster self and actually be open to
it. No, it is easy when you understand that they rely on food, clothing, and shelter. Instead of bombing a country, why don't you send them food packets?
No, but I mean, you were just saying you want to disconnect from human beings. And so
right,
I'm
because
saying that's the part that's not easy, is staying connected to human beings, no matter how distorted.
No, but the thing is, you can disconnect from the culture, but never from the human being, because right now I'm having some coffee, and that was roasted and delivered and packaged by and grown by humans. Their energy and their essence, like, for example, I've worked in a lot of the healing arts in the past, and if you go to a restaurant and you don't feel good, could it be that the cook was angry?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Scientifically, you can't prove that his intent and his anger has a field around his body, that the food is within that field, and the food has memory, just like magnetic tape, and records that, and it can affect you negatively.
Right.
If you want to go more chemical, if I eat at a place and the food is across very salty, I'll tell the waitress, you have a new cook, and he likes eating sweets. And she'll like drop her little menu, her little ticket board, and say, oh, how do you know that? I'm like, well, the food is salty because he eats too many sweets, so he has to compensate, right? So he's throwing salt around him and everything, right? Versus, and it's not just eating sweets like he had for dessert, but he's constantly eating sweets.
Elementary, my dear Watson. You just cut out, by the way.
Change the...
we've got a Wi-Fi connection problem. It's pretty... It's ironic timing, because the connection is bad. Okay, that's the end of the second part. Parts 3 and 4 are also available, so just scroll down past the show notes and you'll find those there. I did decide to air these after all. Based on the comments, it wasn't a voting system, I'm not a Democrat, but just to see if there was enough interest and not too much absolute aversion, or probably about 40, 60, 4 and against, and no unequivocal fours, and some very unequivocal against, and some quite funny comments too. If you do want to find the Greeks, just do a little detective work. There's enough information in these conversations. Okay, so this is Jason at the Limitless, the podcast between. Support this podcast, donate, put some funds into the pot, and buy Prisoner Infinity. Read it, damn you. Okay, that's it. Thanks for listening. Till next time. I said steam.
his jeans. A $50